Moncrief on News Talk.
You had fun last night?
Last night?
With your team. Get dinner, get drunk.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I had fun, but I didn't get drunk. You?
No, it was great. No boring Canadians, no stupid Americans, so...
So what, just a bunch of Finnish guys talking about the cousins they're in love with?
I think I'm going to bed early tonight.
Oh, yeah?
Want you to warm.
There you go. That's the much-anticipated heated rivalry. You can stream the entire first season on Now TV and on Sky. James Dempsey's with us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
Is it as filthy as everyone said it was going to be?
Well, I mean, you can find filthier videos on the internet if you know the right if you know the right places to look.
Yeah.
But certainly it is steamy, shall we say. It is a no holds barred approach to men who fancy the pants off each other, quite literally. Mm. Right now, I would put it in the vein of like Bridgerton, but yet it's sort of like a complementary piece to Bridgerton, right? So Bridgerton is obviously like, you know, steamy smut,
yeah,
and this is ice hockey smut. But the difference between this and Bridgerton is all about like society and flirting and working up. Bridgerton is a lot of foreplay, let's just say, right?
Yeah.
Because we are really working up to them eventually giving in to their, you know, heart's desire and the bodice is a ripped.
Yeah.
Whereas here we have our two actors. Hudson Williams plays Shane Hollander. Connor Story plays Ilya Rosanov. They are rivals on the ice hockey rink. I don't know what even.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's called. Right on the ice, and then off the ice, this undeniable attraction appears between the pair of them. And because they are rivals, they are sort of trying to one-upmanship each other throughout every aspect of their life. They are fearless in their, to a certain extent, at the beginning with each other, because they're trying to not be the weaker one in front of the other person, if you get me. Now, this obviously debuted in Canada. It's a Canadian show. It's made by Crave, which is like kind of like a streaming service in Canada. The only other thing that I know it has made is Canada's Drag Race, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it knows it knows its audience.
Right? Yeah, okay.
And it is adapted from a series of six books written by a woman named Rachel Reed. That is her pen name. And I was aware vaguely of like hockey, what, you know, I don't read any erotica. The only erotica I've ever read is like 50 Shades and now this, because it's kind of broken through into the cultural conversation and I wanted to know what the books were like. And when I say the first book, which is called Game Changer, is the worst book, one of the worst books I've ever read in my life. I mean,
okay,
it is absolutely abysmal. And this is the second book in the series. And it's the far more interesting story, right? But because of events in the first book, they have to dedicate an episode in the 6-episode run towards the story, or to the story from book one. Otherwise, the plot of this won't make any sense. Now, it is a frenetic, chaotic show in the sense that, you know, shirts come off every 5 seconds and there's, you know, they're doing all sort of stuff. They're consenting adults and they're doing all kind of stuff, right?
Okay.
But at the same time, the plot is zipping along at this incredible pace. So we first meet this pair when they are like 17 years old. They are juniors on the cusp of being drafted. These are all hockey things that even post-show, I have literally no idea what's going on. But anyway, they're about to be drafted. I understand they're going to become millionaires overnight, shall we say, right? And the first, you know, then it'll be flash forward 6 months later, 2 weeks later, 1 month later, 5 years later. Like, as in, we follow this pay, we follow their romance and physical romance across a number of years in only 6 episodes, which are about 45 minutes long
each.
Wow,
yeah. And is it fair to say neither of them are out? Because this is ice hockey, which is very macho.
Exactly.
And
because it's set in 2007, you also have to understand, like, which, you know, it was a sobering thought on my walk here. It was almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? So it is a different time in the world. Like, I mean, obviously it's a lot more open than, let's say, 1997 or 1987. And it's a different story to what those hockey gay shows would be. But yes, it's because they are these macho alpha men and they lead their team. They're both the respective captains of of their rival teams, Boston and Montreal, and they are meeting only when they're playing against each other, or for example at the Sochi Olympics, where one is, you know, captaining Canada and the other one is captaining the Russian team, which creates its own dynamic of being gay in Russia and can you be out? Of course you can't, right?
Yeah.
So it's all of this, we can't come out because it'll ruin our careers kind of stuff, right? Now, I would actually argue this is perhaps, in my opinion, the weakest aspect of the plot, in the sense that they spend a lot of time worrying about what it would do to their careers if they come out, without ever showing us anyone suffering from that.
Yeah.
Right? The other thing I'll say about the show is it's written by, I believe, a straight woman. I know she's married with children. That's what I will say to that effect. I don't know her alphabet, but that's what I do know. And this is like the female gaze. And by that, I mean G-A-Y-S, because these men are like not culturally gay at all, in the sense they are like hunky Abercrombie models who play hockey and don't like, in, you know, trust, they're not watching Canada's Drag Race on Crave.
Yeah, okay,
right?
Yeah.
Like, they're playing hockey with each other and looking at each other in the showers. And that's kind of the extent of their gayness, except for all the, you know, sex that they have, right? But I will say I found it very funny and camp in the right kind of way. And it is really like if you saw the Luca Guadagnino movie Challengers, right, with Zendaya and Josh O'Connor and the other guy whose name I can't remember anyway, which is a sort of like a three-way romance between two competitive tennis players and one of their wives, who's herself a tennis player. And I loved that movie. It's, you know, it's like, there's not a lot, I don't know if there's any sex in it at all, but it's a lot about the anticipation, the build-up, and the flirtation between these three different people in all the different combinations that you can find. It has an absolutely fantastic soundtrack. And Jacob Tierney, who is the creator of this, he broke onto the scene as one of the, you know, the series regulars in Are You Afraid of the Dark, which is a 90s deep cut for, you know, any millennial there. He has really turned these novels into something. He has elevated them, because let me tell you, I am on book four. And they're all gay hockey players now, is all I'm going to say. That's the future of hockey. It's the gay sport in North America, according to this like fantasy world. But he really has taken these novels and turned them into something incredibly watchable. And I have to give incredible credit to the two actors who were basically unknowns before this started. Hudson Williams is the Canadian one. Connor Story in particular, he has the kind of meteor role. Shane Hollander is the straight-laced kind of goody two-shoes. The other one is the Russian firebrand womanizer. So he gets more to do. But like, as a, as a foreign language person in general, I speak a couple of, like, I'm interested in languages. Mm. He's from Texas. He doesn't speak Russian. I don't speak Russian, but like his Russian is so, I mean, he gives these like monologues in Russian that seem so believable and has been really widely credited as being really sounding like Russian American, but really sounding very, very accurate. Mm. He doesn't have a clue what he's saying. He just learns them all phonetically. So I think we are seeing the emergence of these two actors that are really, have the potential to break through and become big stars. But, you know,
are they gay, actually, by the way? Or are they a bit vague about that?
It's like, as in, I think it's, you know, someone asked Jacob Tierney, the creator of this, and he said, I couldn't ask that in the audition and you shouldn't be asking me. So
be important, really?
Well, certainly, put it this way, if they aren't, and my understanding, I honestly don't know, but if they aren't, they're certainly not afraid to put it out there.
Okay, fair enough. They're good at acting gay, which is basically their job. Right, our next show is His and Hers. You can stream the entire series now on Netflix. Here's a clip.
This morning, Lumpkin County Sheriff's Office got a report, an anonymous call about a body being found in the National Forest in Dahlonega. Some deputies came out, and they did find a body. A female, 30s, Caucasian. She hasn't been formally identified, and once she has and we notify the next kid, then we'll go ahead and release that name. But right now, we can't give you any more than that. That's all we got. Thank you very much
for being here. Come on, detective.
No, I need you.
Why the large police presence if it's not a murder?
Can you tell us how many sheriffs?
No cause of death's been determined at this time. Again, when we have something, we'll share it with y'all. Now, look, we have a job to do. You need to respect that.
Okay, that's His and Hers, which very successful journalist moves back to our hometown when there's a murder. We've never seen anything like that before.
And that's, would you believe she ends up sleeping with someone on the job as well?
Yeah, wow.
Well, that's because that's all a journalist ever do in any scripted TV show. So this is adapted from a novel by a British writer named Alice Feeney. And she's kind of Netflix crime writer du jour because she's got two more novels in pre-production, one with Jessica Chastain attached to produce. So she's got the goods, shall we say, right? And this, for me, the first episode of this was like really promising, and it felt like old school Netflix. Like as in when Netflix first kind of emerged and there were these glossy dramas with big name stars attached kind of for the first time, you know, we were seeing like actors defer to TV and there was budget and all that. And the longer I got into it, the absolutely worse I found it. I found the mystery not interesting and incredibly old-fashioned. And by old-fashioned, I mean it opens with like a woman who's been stabbed 40 times and she's naked on the roof of a car. And you're like, okay. Is this the kind of same story we're telling again here? Mm. And the whole drama comes from the fact that it's his and her version of this story, right? So we have John Bernthal there, best known, I guess, of late for his role as Carmi's brother in The Bear. But he's like a proper character actor who has been in everything for years.
Yeah, but he's always the same kind of character.
Agreed, yeah. Like he's found his niche, and but he doesn't really break from it. And then Tessa Thompson is Anna. She's the TV journalist, and he's the detective on the case. She's the TV journalist. This is not a spoiler. They are also an estranged married couple, right? So she arrives back in the town and is able to kind of stick the knife into his investigation by asking very awkward and provocative questions. And he is holding back from the full truth of the story, which I cannot even really begin to talk about because that will definitely constitute multiple spoilers. Now, the first episode, honestly, well plotted, kind of aside from a very stereotypical murder scene or, you know, murder tableau, murder mise-en-scene, whatever you want to put it. Aside from that, I was like, yeah, I'm kind of interested in this. There was good banter between the pair of them. They, you know, Tessa Thompson and John Bernthal are good at playing angry at each other, estranged couple. But the further we got into it and the more convoluted and ridiculous the plot became, it began to lose me. I didn't find it like ridiculously fun. I found it ridiculously naff in the sense that when the final episode denouement comes and you are revealed with, you know, who the murderer is, I thought it was so utterly silly that it had zapped the entire show of all its pathos and drama and intrigue and interest. Like, it was almost laughable, risible, pure nonsense. And that is not the tone they were going for. So,
oh, dear. Okay.
So I was ready to get back to Heated Rivalry, put it that way.
Yeah. And the final reveal, was your reaction? Well, obviously it was terrible, but did you see it coming anyway?
I don't think...
Or did it, like, she just pulled something out of her ass, you know, that wasn't even earned?
I think, so a lot of the subplot involves the fact that the murder victim went to this snooty private school in Atlanta with Anna, Tessa Thompson's Anna. And it revolves around a little clique of girls from that high school era who were bullies. And the kind of bullying that they get away with in the school, I mean, I'm like, where are the adults? Yeah. Where's a single teacher to put a stop to the, you know, the hazing level bullying? Even beyond that. And then when the ultimate reveal comes by way of a letter, and I'll say no more than that.
Yeah.
It really, truly was spectacularly over the top that I just was ready to check it.
Right. Our final show is Beast Games. New episodes of season 2 every Wednesday on Amazon Prime Video. Here's the clip.
And lastly, yellow.
Red, green, yellow, blue.
What are the last two?
Oh my god.
What are the last two?
All right, someone finish the tower. The first tower is now complete. He's going to the city.
Oh my god.
People are finishing. Get your spots to the city before time runs out. Oh my gosh. The spots are going fast.
Quicker.
Time is running out fast.
There you go. That's Beast Games. How rich is Mr. Beast?
I mean, he is extremely rich, yeah. Right? And like, I'm not trying to be just a contrarian and say I don't like his oeuvre or style, but I really don't.
Yes.
I'm not being a contrarian just for the sake of it. What I would say is he is the world's most successful YouTuber, and you do not become the world's most successful YouTuber without gaining a lot of fans,
yeah.
Right? So Jimmy Donaldson created this show with Netflix. This is now in its second season, and the first season was a chaotic mess where I think it started with like it might have been 500 or 1,000 contestants, and they are eliminating them for this $5 million prize that then of course became a $10 million prize, but there was also a private island and Lamborghinis and you know, a lot of wealthy rich things thrown at people who are both desperate and also desperate to remain on the show but unable to really have control over their role in the show, because I mean you couldn't be eliminated at the, you know, at a minor whim of fate. Yeah. Right now this time it has come around for a second season, because when it first started, you know, Amazon paid, obviously, Mr. Beast a lot of money to get his brand on their service, because he doesn't need them. Already his shows, you know, on YouTube get 80 million views. So he doesn't need,
yeah,
he doesn't need Amazon, but I'm sure he likes the money that they have obviously paid him. And they do need him, because when this launched, it was the top non-scripted show on Amazon. Again, that's quite vague. I don't actually know what that means, but it was the second biggest debut of 2025 for Amazon as well, right? So this time round, it begins with 200 contestants competing for $5 million. 100 of them are brawn, 100 of them are brain. And it's who is going to win, muscle over brain, right? So the thing about the show is, it is constantly screaming and shouting at you. Like, you know, there's this idea that now shows are produced in such a way as to cater to audiences who are second screening on their phones. Like, this is catered for people in a coma, because because they are never... Mr. Beast and his interchangeable co-hosts, whose names I couldn't even be bothered writing down, offer commentary to every single thing that is happening throughout every single moment in all of the challenges. They repeat the instructions, they show you exactly what's happened, they do a recap of who has just been eliminated, and they are shouting and screaming at this entire time. Maybe I'm just getting old and like this is not for me, but I don't want to be, I don't want to talk down to YouTubers in general. Many YouTubers create incredibly interesting, varied and really well-made content. And I'm sure Mr. Beast does as well. It's just not for me, right? But this show, it just is, it's like a maximalist show. It's just about the biggest spectacle it can possibly produce. But there is like nothing once you look behind it. You know, it's just people stacking blocks.
Yes.
Or playing dodge, playing dodgeball on an LED screen, but like, you know, like that's it. Like, as in, and because they are eliminating the contestants so quickly, you don't really have an affinity for them, or you're not rooting for them. If anything, you're actively rooting against them, because the whole purpose of the show is just to be mercilessly cruel.
Wow. Those three shows are Heated Rivalry. You can stream the entire first season on Now TV and Sky. His and Hers, you can stream the entire series now on Netflix. And Beast Games, new episodes of season 2 every Wednesday on Amazon Prime Video. James, thanks a million.
Thank you.
James Dempsey there.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.